Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of my Thursday evening Dhamma talk from January 17th, 2019. This talk is on the fourth chapter from the Dhammapada. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
This is from, what is it? Dhammapada for the Papavaga. My subtitle is Heartwood and Flowers, and you'll see how that fits in. Did you read it, Lorna? No, you muted yourself? Okay, that's fine.
Yes, no, I have read it, yeah. Like you say, it's very flowery. I'm rather surprised that the Buddha, referred to things quite like this, but
yeah,
there you go.
Very metaphorical, but also the whole of the Dhammapada are remembered teachings of the Buddha, but not necessarily each and every word is, and this is also a translation too. It's a translation from the original compilation that took place 2,600 years ago, 2,500 years ago. So there is that. It's a bit flowery, but the Buddha did use metaphor, and so here's just another example of it. It's a pretty good one when you see it in the context. But this whole series on the Dhammapada, I think the Dhammapada is probably the most quoted book in all the Pali Canon, simply because there's all these concise lines. But usually it's taken out of context, and the people that read it obviously have no understanding. Most people don't have understanding of dependent origination or Four Noble Truths. So it's hard to really make use of it. But this one really, they all kind of get to the heart of the matter too. Let me read it. Who will overcome this realm of death with all its gods? And I have to stop right there, because immediately the first line in this chapter, the Buddha's making this correlation of non-physical realms of existence with gods and deities, or as a plane of existence that we should worship deities from, as a realm of death. He's equating it. It's all the same thing. And it's a death rooted in ignorance. In other words, living a life rooted in ignorance is like a living death. Who will overcome this realm of death with all its gods? Who will perfect the well-taught eightfold path of wisdom as an expert garland maker perfects their floral designs? The well-focused Dhamma practitioner will overcome this realm of death with all its gods. The well-focused Dhamma practitioner will perfect the well-taught eightfold path of wisdom, as an expert garland maker perfects their floral designs. When I read something like that, you've heard me say this 100 times or maybe 1,000 times now, Lorna, it's hard for me to understand how far off base all the adaptations, accommodations, and embellishments that have been made to the Buddha Dhamma have brought us, where there's hardly any mention of the Eightfold Path, the Heart of the Dhamma, or the Four Noble Truths, when these were original teachings of an awakened human being, and yet we can understand it because we know the inclination of a mind rooted in ignorance to ignore its own ignorance. So there's even a Buddha in the world giving his teachings. Here they are. And even during the Buddha's time, we didn't want to hear what you need to do is to develop the Eightfold Path. We wanted to adapt it in some way. We're still doing it. And that's why you hear me say it over and over again, because it's so important to keep our focus just on this heartwood of the Dhamma and not try to introduce something else. It's just another distraction. Realizing that form is like foam on the water, a mirage, they deflect Mara's flower-tipped arrows of sensuality and go beyond the grasp of death. That a long sentence there, but the metaphor of Mara as a mind rooted in ignorance and deflecting the flower-tipped arrow of Mara is what a beautiful metaphor for the danger of giving in to sensuality. Flower is the sensuality, but it's really Mara's arrow. It's an arrow that we're shooting at ourselves. Remember, Mara is the metaphor for our own ignorance and a confused and troubled mind rooted in that ignorance. And so we're constantly chasing after these flower-tipped arrows and we're the ones shooting the arrow, the Salata Sutta. Mara directs the person whose mind is distracted towards insatiable craving for flowers of pleasure. A sage seeking alms is like a bee gathering honey. Both sustain themselves with moderation, always harmless. Always mindful of one's own acts, unconcerned with others, the words of those lacking heartwood are like a beautiful flower with no fragrance. It's almost a sad line, isn't it? A beautiful flower with no fragrance. The words of those lacking heartwood are like a beautiful flower with no fragrance. Here's a teaching of the Buddha again from 2,600 years ago. Because he experienced teacher after teacher after teacher of beautiful speakers that weren't speaking any heartwood. It was like a flower without any fragrance. And the line just before that, always mindful of one's own acts and unconcerned with others, that touches a little bit on what we were talking about before and people getting in our face and reacting to it or not. If we're mindful of our own acts, and that's what we're holding in mind, we talk about this too a lot, that we gain control of our thinking, and through gaining control of our thinking, we gain control of our actions, our thoughts, words, and our deeds. And in a one-on-one situation where someone might be in our face about something, or even acting in a way that we feel like we need to correct them in some way, we find it threatening or at least maybe even hurtful towards them, and we feel like we have the right to intervene. The Buddha's teaching that when we're mindful of only our own acts, we will be unconcerned with others because we won't be projecting ourselves onto them and into them in a way that they're affecting us in a negative way. In other words, we are not clinging anymore. Going back to a little bit what we talked about, because we're not clinging to form, we're not becoming entangled with other people's forms through that clinging and through the need for things to be different. We're simply at peace, no matter what's occurring. The words of those established in heartwood are skillful, like a beautiful and fragrant flower. Established in heartwood, though mortal, one does many good deeds, just as many fine garlands can be made from a heap of flowers. The sweet smell of flowers is lost to the world and to the wind. The fragrance of true virtue pervades all directions. I was thinking a little bit earlier. Let me finish this and I'll make that comment. Of all fragrances, the fragrance of virtue is sweetest. The fragrance of sandalwood and jasmine is faint. The fragrance of virtue touches all. Mara can never distract one from the eightfold path when they abide in refined mindfulness and right view. Again, that's the reason, I know you've heard me say this 1,000 times too, the reason why the Buddha taught an eightfold path as the path to awakening is because it provides the framework and guidance to not be distracted by a mind rooted in ignorance, a mind that is otherwise affected by Mara. A lotus, fragrant and pleasing, grows in a heap of roadside rubbish. Even so, the wise Dhamma practitioner shines resplendent in their wisdom on the rubbish heap of mortals buried in ignorance. What a closing line. Even so, the wise Dhamma practitioner shines resplendent in their wisdom on the rubbish heap of mortals buried in ignorance. That's the end of that chapter. Thank you. That last line, some people might take offense to that last line as harsh, as mere mortals buried in the rubbish of their own ignorance. But that's exactly what the Buddha's teaching, that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that leads to all of our suffering. And a mind that is rooted in self-reference, clinging to wrong views, will object to even language like that because it's taking it personally. And it's even taking it personally in its entanglements in the world. Next week's talk is on, I can't think of the name of the Vaga, what it's about, but it's about fools and foolishness. And in that chapter, almost every other word relates to fools and foolishness as it relates to the Dhamma. So I want you to comment on this too, Lauren, after I just make this one brief comment. The continual emphasis that the Buddha placed, and I know I do it too, because I learned from reading how the Buddha teaches, the continual emphasis on keeping the Dhamma practice pure and well-framed by the Eightfold Path and in the context of dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, because the Buddha realized during his time, and I've seen it now because of my position, how easily people get off track by wanting to associate something that seems pleasing, reasonable, even compassionate, maybe even loving, maybe even intelligent, but they don't see the I making in it, and they attach it to the Buddha's Dhamma, call it Buddhist practice or spiritual practice. And as soon as they do that, it doesn't diminish the Buddha's Dhamma a little bit, and there's still a good bit left, the entire Dhamma is lost. And that's why the Buddha emphasized that over and over again. And it's getting back to how we started talking about the form aggregate. All those other things attach itself to the form aggregate, and when we ourselves believe that the form aggregate is us, rather than just an aspect of these six impersonal properties, we can't get rid of it. We can't let it go. We will continue to defend the view that we've taken, even if it confuses us. So that's my talk. What do you have to say about that? About the about this chapter and my last comment.
Well, I'll start with your last comment. I know exactly what you mean by trying to keep the Dharma practice pure as the Buddha saw it needed to be kept, and I do appreciate that, because there is, I think, everything else in the world apart from your classes seem to be there to distract, to please, to get good feelings from, and all that sort of stuff, and I'm doing the right thing, and I'm being here being virtuous and praying or whatever. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
But even there's no end to this, though, John, that even though you keep your classes as simple and as pure and as straight as an arrow as you can, I am still attached to that. I mean, you just get attached to everything. It's just like a monster that you just almost can't control. So even though you keep the room where we meditate very simple, there's not a lot of decorations, there's no candles burning, all musk in the room, none of that. To try and keep the distractions to a minimum, but still you get attached to it. And I know that you're my teacher, and we have a very professional relationship, I think, and a very good one. But still, I view you more than just my teacher, because I get attached to. But if you come into somebody's life twice a week, it's almost inevitable that you're going to get an attachment to that, and you're going to have sort of like, feelings or thoughts or things around that, which is all attachment, which is, you're asking me not to do that. And I understand that the Buddha is asking me not to do that. But as I say, it's just like a raging monster in your mind that you just can't help get attached to. Stuff.
Yeah, I'm giggling at that raging monster, but that's very akin to what the Buddha said when in the Loka Sutta, isn't he? He looked out at the world upon his awakening, said the world is a flame, and it really is true. But there's some subtle differences, I think, between clinging attachment and simply having. Let me think of the right words. Fond preferences for people. And even when you read, or at least when I read the suttas, I can almost feel the and sense the fondness that Siddhartha had for say Sariputta or Ananda or Moggallana. And not that he wasn't fond of everyone equally, but there were people that were obviously special to him. And I think that's just the way it is. I know that there's people that have come in and out of the Sangha over the years. You've seen, you know, maybe there's hundreds of them now and very few that actually stay. And there's some that I hardly think about, not because they're not important to me. There was, for whatever reason, there was no great impression made. But then there's some that have come through, and there's a sadness in me because they didn't get it. You know, I can't tell you why, but some people, and then there's some ongoing, you probably guess who this is, but there's some ongoing relationships with people that used to be a big part of our Sangha, no longer are, and that's just an ongoing disappointment. I make the joke that if you looked up dukkha in a dictionary, you'd see their picture there. But I don't mean that in a disparaging way towards the person I'm referring to. It just means that there's even disappointment within teaching the Dhamma too, and how people react. I still remember the night you first came to that class in Flemington, and I think I said to you, you had a brilliant mind. I think I probably said that 2 or 3 weeks later. You made an impression on me, because of your eagerness to understand, and not, you know, I wish everybody had that eagerness to understand, and the and not this inherent resistance to understand that a lot of people have. So, you know, when I call you TP, I'm serious about that.
I feel I do, because everybody has a resistance to this, otherwise you would just get it and float away into the horizon sort of thing. So, I mean, there is an inner resistance that almost I'm not conscious of, so there is an inner resistance in that sense. But I'm not resistant in the theme of accepting the Buddhist way of thinking.
Yep.
You know, take yourself out of all your and all the judgments and personalization you do as we go around go through our lives. I feel like I'm not resistant to that, but yet I am, and that's the conflict that I feel I understand the Buddha, and wouldn't life be simpler if we could not have all this judgment around us, which does bring on dukkha. As I say, everything is, and even we talk about the understanding and the wisdom of the Buddha all the time. To for him to be so conscious that everything in life is impermanent, so everything in life has the potential of being disappointing. That's just a phenomenal outlook, and to understand that. And
yes.
I do understand that, but I can't hang on to it and go about my day fully committed to that thought. You know, I just get involved with stuff, and it's almost, like I say, it's just an insatiable monster that you just want to create this ego thing.
But the important thing for you, Lorna, but in general too, is to not... It's important that you recognize when you're not seeing things from right view, but it's also important to acknowledge all the times that you do, that you're not caught up in it. The fact that let's just put it this way, you lose concentration momentarily or situationally is not all that important. What's most important is that you recognize that you're doing it.
Yeah.
And it's clinging to a fabricated view of Lorna as an awakened human being that's making you feel like you're not getting it, but you are getting it. You've made some remarkable insights. Just that insight now about impermanence is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. And the more we can understand the impermanence of all things, the more we can integrate it in each moment, the less entangled we will be, because we understand it's all fleeting, including these views that we have of ourselves. You know, the whole notion that the five clinging aggregates, this belief in this personal ongoing experience of disappointment in the world, is simply a fabrication. It's, as we said tonight and many other sutras, it's foam on the water.
Yeah.
So no matter.
And I can see that. I can see that when we're in the meditation room and you're teaching, I can clearly see exactly what the Buddha teaches. And then just going back to sort of how you say I must recognize, you know, the progress I have made. Sometimes I really do. And sometimes I realize that I'm not thinking. It dawns on me that I am not thinking.
Yep.
It stopped. And I'm talking about this is when I'm going about my day, not when I'm on my cushion.
Yeah.
Sometimes I am not thinking. I'm not conscious of myself judging this, judging that. It stops. And I think, and sometimes when I realize, and then you catch yourself, obviously you're thinking, it dawns on you that you're not thinking. And then you catch yourself and think, what a marvelous time that was.
Yeah. Well, you know? Isn't it? And really what you're thinking enough to function in the world in that moment.
Yes.
But it feels like you're not thinking because you're not thinking of you.
Exactly. That's what I mean. When I say I'm not thinking, I mean I'm not thinking of me in the sense of the five clinging aggregates.
Yep, there's no self-reference.
I'm still doing something. I'm still going about my day doing something.
And isn't that...
In a physical form. But I know that I've gone through a period where I've just dropped this five clinging aggregates concept. You know, the concept of the five clinging aggregates and self is just... It's just gone out of my consciousness.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, there's a time later when you realize, and you think, wow, you know?
Yep. So I don't know. I don't know what Matt's going to tell you about form. I think you can tell him. Because that's really it, Lorna. That's there when there's no self-reference, that's you've experienced that fourth level of jhana for an extended period of time. A mind with no self-reference. It's just a mind at peace. Yet it's fully functioning in the world. And that's even that is such a hard thing for people to grasp. What's going to happen to me when I let go of all? What's going to motivate me? What's going to animate me in this moment if I'm not thinking of me? Well, you got to experience it. And you did, you know, and you do.
I have done that, you know, many, many times. You know, I realize that I've just not been thinking about me. I've just been doing something, but there's no... reference to the five clinging, so, you know, as we look at ourselves through the five clinging aggregates, there's no sort of like strong reference going on.
Yep.
And that's about as magic as I can get.
And it is magical, and this relates magical in a wonderful sense, not in that. And this relates all of that is experience, that feeling of not thinking, the non-self-referential mind, is occurring in a mind united in a body.
Yes.
It's just not this, you know, it's just not a reference to Lorna. It happens to be your name and who you are and et cetera, et cetera. But it's not Lorna that's doing it. It's just this thing of six properties that is fully, mindfully alert of what's occurring, which is nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah, which is nothing. Yeah,
and isn't it marvelous that and those are the significant times of our lives. It's I was hoping I made this point Tuesday. What's today? Thursday, Tuesday night. That the most wonderful thing of developing the Buddha's Dhamma is absolutely nothing. Right? I mean, it's shedding every wrong view and simply being mindfully alert and aware of what's occurring.
Yeah.
Not occurring to me, not occurring to you. It's just what's occurring. What a great class.
Anyway, we have a snowstorm coming this weekend. I don't know if you...
Yeah, I noticed. I think it's supposed to start Saturday night, so we'll likely have class Saturday morning. I hope we will. I think the problem class looks like it might be Tuesday, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Yeah.
I hope not. I hope we...
Yes, I hope we, yeah. Because when we get out of step with these book reviews, it throws us.
Yeah, I know. That's the only problem doing it over the winter, but it's also a good time to do it. Are you you're enjoying it, going through it again?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, I've been looking forward to it since before Christmas.
Oh, good.
You know, I've been looking forward to doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, good. I have too. I always like going through the book, and this year additional sutras that I'll work in there, I think, will be helpful too for everyone. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm so glad you joined tonight.
All right, John. Thank you very much for this evening.
I'll see you Saturday.
And I'll see you Saturday. Yeah.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.